This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence, but committed no crime. And bad mistakes,
and welcome to Tag Teams back again.
Whoop, there it is.
Yeah, yeah, Tag Teams back again. Kelly and Marty back.
Woo!
Back again after a bit of a absence, 6 weeks, maybe more than that.
Oh, way too long, way too long. Reunited and it feels so good.
Feels so good. Yeah, yeah, I've been busy. With moving and vacations and work and yeah, getting back into the wrestling podcast scene tonight.
Yes, you know, the world's greatest self-promoter.
Yeah. Did you like that?
Hey guys, look at me. I got three podcasts coming out. I like it.
I thought I could pull that off because I'm not one to brag usually, so I thought it would come off more earnest than bragging.
I think it came off plenty earnest. Plus, you're the Brainbuster champion. And so right. I'm going to be challenging you. Dissension.
Yes, yes, Dissension. Vince Russo booking for the tag team here. Yeah, for those of you listening, not understanding what we're talking about, on the ProWrestlingOnly.com message board earlier today, I posted an announcement saying, never fear, don't fear. Kelly Nelson's podcasts are returning in the month of October here on the Place to Be Nation.
PWO Network.
PWO PTBN Network. That is Tag Teams Back Again. That is Titans of Wrestling. And then I Am the Champion on Brainbuster. And yes, Marty is returning for a rematch.
The only person to have ever won Brainbuster besides Kelly.
Yes, and a mystery third opponent. So look for that around Halloween. Same with Titans, I think will probably be the end of the month. So anyway, we are gathered here today for more WWF Tag Team Wrestling from 1987. This time we are doing an in-depth look at the month of March 1987. Of course, the month of March 1987 was when WrestleMania 3 happened, the biggest wrestling spectacle of all time. And there were a number of tag team matches on that card. So I thought, hell, let's do it. Let's do a WrestleMania 3 show. Let's look at those tag team matches. And with one notable exception, though,
right. Yes, that's right. I forgot we did not include the midget match.
Yes, it was a tough call. I do like midgets, and we have seen the Haiti Kid on the show earlier. But not making the cut is the famous mixed match, six-man match with Hillbilly Jim and a couple midgets against King Kong Bundy and a couple midgets.
This means I still have yet to see a Hillbilly Jim match in my life.
Yeah, well, we'll have to rectify that somehow someday. Because
I don't know, man. I think I'm just going to try to keep avoiding Hillbilly Jim. So
You haven't lived until you've seen a Hillbilly Jim match.
I feel like, yeah, I guess perhaps I'm not a true blue wrestling fan. You know, always cherry picking the best possible matches.
Yes, yes, you are. You millennials and your cherry picking matches. I lived through this time, man. I had to watch those Hillbilly Jim matches. In all seriousness, though, like after WrestleMania 3, Hillbilly Jim kind of fades away, and there's not too many more opportunities for viewing of Hillbilly matches. So anyway, there's four other tag team matches from WrestleMania 3 that we will be looking at. You have the Can-Am Connection against Don Morocco and Bob Orton, a team we haven't looked at yet. We have a six-man tag with the Hart Foundation and dastardly former heel referee Danny Davis against those he wronged, the British Bulldogs and Tito Santana. From there, we have the end of the Dream Team, the end of the Dream, the death of a dream.
Yes, it's a sad day in tag teams back again.
Yes, it is. Perhaps the team that we've loved the most so far, I think.
My favorite. Yeah, definitely my favorite team.
Yeah, I think me. Yeah, mine as well. So the original Dream Team, Brutus the Barber, or not the Barber. Actually, he becomes the Barber at WrestleMania 3 for the first time. Brutus Beefcake and Greg the Hammer Valentine against the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers. And lastly, the match that was on in the death spot right before the main event, which was, of course, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. We're going to look at Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik returning to tag teams back again and going against the Killer Bees. Yeah. And
silence.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. And to pad out the show, we're looking at first, before we get into WrestleMania, three other matches from around the United States in the weeks preceding WrestleMania 3. One from Boston, one from Philly, and actually the third one is from Toronto. So one from Canada. And
boo.
Well, Toronto, yes.
We agree. But I was trying to create some friction before Brainbuster.
Well, you know, I'm from the West, and us out West don't really like the Eastern Canadians. Although I am rooting for the Toronto Blue Jays, who will start their quest for a World Series title tomorrow night. yes. That's about as far as it goes, as far as my...
I see. I was just updated on the baseball scene, and I did not... Tigers sucked this year. They sucked early. They sucked often. So I totally checked out. I just found out that the Cubs are in the hunt. I think they're playing today.
They are. Yeah.
Therefore, I am rooting against them. Because I don't want them. I want their suffering to continue.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. 108 years? 7 years? 107
years. Years. Going on 107 wow. years. So apparently Back to the Future.
Yes.
To win. So I would really like them to actually get to the World Series and lose. That would be quite sweet.
Right. So they were predicted to win. Like, I was talking to my coworkers earlier today about that. I couldn't remember if in Back to the Future Part 2 they were predicted to win or that they lost in the World Series in the future, or in 2015.
In 2015, yes. So it's interesting. We'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I probably won't be watching that much.
Right. And of course, the name on the marquee, folks, is professional wrestling. The greatest sport, the greatest entertainment.
The king of sports, as New Japan would let you know.
Yes. So here we go. We're going to go to Marty's hometown.
Beantown. Which was, is also the hometown of the greatest women's wrestler living today, Sasha Banks.
Yes. And that will be later tonight, the NXT show.
And yes.
Looking forward to that. So, yes, Boston, March the 7th, 1987. The combatants are the World Tag Team Champions, the Hart Foundation, versus the aforementioned Fabulous Rougeau Brothers, or the
Not yet fabulous.
Not so fabulous. Just okay, Rougeau Brothers.
Yeah, kind of bland, vanilla.
Yes.
Good looking French Canadian guys.
They were, especially in their old school, like 1950s robes, ring robes that they wear. That kind of added to the blandness. Anyway, Marty, what did you think of this match?
I thought this is, you know, upon rewatch, I thought, wow, this might be the best Hart Foundation match, best heel Hart Foundation match I've ever seen, and probably the best babyface Rougeau's match I've ever seen. And then I went and read my notes back from my blog at ridingspacemountain.blogspot.com, and I found out I agreed with myself that I already thought this from beforehand. So it's always good to know that you lined up after 3 years. I can't believe it's been 3 years, but I think it's been 3 years since I watched this match. Yeah. So the Hart Foundation, just to bring everybody back up to speed, are fresh off the screw job of the Bulldogs, a match we actually did not watch for Tag Teams Back Again, but it's basically a 5-minute match where Dynamite gets fucked. And I'm going to try not to fucking swear so much for Magpie. Sorry about that, brother. So they're fresh off the screw job where, you know, basically Davey Boy had to go up against 2-1. Dane Davis with the egregious, like, obvious not trying to, you know, call the match down the middle. And the Hart Foundation end up winning the tag team titles. And then so we get – so we start off with a lot of I mean, this is like – I feel like Bret Hart – maybe it was the World Tag Team Championship. I really felt like he upped his game during this stretch. He was really healing it up. I mean, it was the combination of look at me, mom, at the same time as being like a total coward. He let himself get shown up completely by the Rougeaus. He was getting tripped up. He was getting slapped. He was running to the outside so that he could, you know, hug Jim the Anvil Neidhart and Jimmy Hart. I mean, he was really, you know, healing it up to 11. And then even Anvil was getting in on it, and he was bumping around for the Rougeaus. Gorilla points out quite correctly that Raymond does not have as much pep in the step as Jacques, you know, definitely a little bit, is not as with it, you know, not as entertaining. But they do a pretty good job working, Brett's leg over in an entertaining fashion. I thought the, best part was Brett kind of went for like this lame, monkey flip, and they kind of just kicked him in the ass. And it was pretty funny. anyways, anybody who's ever seen a Hart Foundation match would know that the blind knee is the transition to any Hart's heat segment. But Jacques, or is it Raymond? Raymond sees the blind knee, and you know he's studied some tapes, folks. He knows some, and he sees it. He's ready to hit Bret Hart, but Jim the Anvil Neidhart comes up behind him and slugs him from behind.
Nice.
We'll actually see the same transition spot against the Islanders in the next week. So I like it. Bret, you know, he had been using the blind knee for about a year now, so now he's having people catch on to it. But now he's got Jim the Anvil Neidhart coming from behind to slug him. Nice little twist on the move. You know, Bret Hart definitely showing that he's one of the more intelligent ring generals in the World Wrestling Federation at this point. They do a good job varying, you know, between Anvil's power and Bret's he's a douchebag throughout the entire heel segment. And Ramon does a decent job. He's not exactly my favorite wrestler. He's got some – he just does his normal hope spots of like backslides and sunset flips. Jacques was a great cheerleader. You could hear him the entire time yelling, chanting for Ray. And amazingly, the Boston crowd gets behind a couple of Quebecois. Anybody knows anybody about Boston? The three teams we had are the Lakers, the Yankees, and the Montreal Canadiens. So the fact that anybody from Montreal can get over in Boston is pretty shocking.
Yeah.
And when Jacques gets the hot tag, this place goes nuts, proving that professional wrestling transcends all sorts of, you know, xenophobia and racism when it wants to. anybody can be a babyface in professional wrestling.
That is true.
Correctly.
That is true.
So there's general Bret Hart, Hart Foundation fun going on in the home stretch, usually with the hearts colliding into each other. That's usually how they end up doing it, and it's always fun when they do that. Jacques has Bret Hart small packaged, and then that dastardly Danny Davis reverses it behind the ref's back. The newly minted member of the Hart Foundation already paying dividends for the Hart Foundation. I would say, I'm generally, a little bit more down on Hart Foundation and Rougeau tag work than most people, but, they did pretty damn well against each other. Mm-hmm. Definitely one of the best matches between these two teams and either team's history.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one too. The Rougeaus, I've seen them now twice, and I liked that match they had with the Islanders. The last time where it was got kind of nasty at the end. And I've seen another Hearts Rougeaus match from late 86, and I like that one too from MSG. So I'm still, I'm giving the Rougeaus a chance. The Hearts, I agree completely with your assessment of Bret with the asshole heel tactics. That's, he really shines as a heel at this time.
Yeah.
Sure. And, we've watched a lot of Hearts matches, and I'm starting to really think that a lot of the recent criticisms in certain circles are kind of unfair. I think maybe, yes, they didn't produce the most classic matches, but as a team that did what they were supposed to do, got heat, shined up the baby faces nice, I think they were always, they always did that well. So... anyway, yeah, there was some good heel and peril at the beginning. I want to get into the Danny Davis thing because he was really – the crowd was red hot in their hatred for him in this match.
Yeah, he could have been like – he could have been the number one heel in the promotion.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I want to ask. I mean, at this time – yeah, it was – I think kind of that you would say the peak. It was only about a month or so after he – became a wrestler or became or got disbarred from being a referee. And I was watching at this time and it was, it was a big angle and I hated him. I hated the man. And there was a lot of heat and, they played that right. They'd built it up for a long time with all his biased calls. And right now, yeah, I mean, he was a guy that probably had to be a little concerned for his safety in some places. Yeah, the fans really hated him, and they really did a good job in building him as a heel, but they didn't really do too much with him afterwards. You could argue that there probably wasn't a lot you could do with him once he started wrestling because he's limited in that regard and doesn't look very impressive in the ring, of course, but... at this particular moment in time, he was maybe arguably the hottest heel they had in the WWF.
Yeah, it probably was. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Danny Davis is like a total void of charisma.
And yeah.
He's just the least entertaining person you'll ever meet in wrestling. Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with him. I mean, I guess you could say, well, what can you do with a referee turned wrestler, all that stuff. But I think there was things, the crowd pleasing stuff they could have done. It's just Danny Davis was just terribly boring as a personality and as a wrestler. But yeah, I mean, it's proof that this angle, like literally anybody could have got over with it because Danny Davis is just boring as all hell.
Yeah, I think facially, though, he has a good, like, face for someone you just want to smack. He's good at with a cocky kind of smirk on his face, and he's got an easily hateable face.
I'll have to look this up. From all the Daily Motion I watch is in like 2040.
Yeah, he's got a good smirk, but behind that and other than that, yeah, there isn't too much there. So yeah, this was a really solid match. I have no complaints with it at all. Going on now, we're going to Philly, city of brotherly love. Valentine's Day in the City of Brotherly Love, March the 14th. Oh no, sorry. It would have been Valentine's Day, February the 14th. No, it's 3 days before St. Patrick's Day.
It's one day before the Ides of March.
Yes, yes. So March the 14th in Philadelphia. This time we have the Hearts versus the Islanders, and we watched one of their matches from late 1986 from Toronto. That was a really, really, really good match. So it's a little bit later here. The atmosphere before the match was pretty heated. This is basically the Philly version of the match we just saw, just substitute in the Islanders for the Rougeaus, because you have the same reaction for Danny Davis as you got in Boston.
You have the same transition spot to the heel seg.
Yeah, it's worked very similar.
It has worked very similar. I don't think it's as good, though.
No,
which
is
shocking.
So, Marty, you want to explain your feelings on this one?
Yeah, I was let down by this. Like, you know, when I first watched it a couple of years ago, I had high expectations with the Islanders in there and their Maple Leaf Gardens match being so good. And watching it back, I really didn't feel any different about it. I still really like the you know, Thomas seeing the blind knee and Anvil sledging him, and that was a great spot. But there was a lot of extra stalling at the beginning of this one. I thought the shine was fine, but I didn't think it was – I think that a lot of this rests – both of these matches rest on the shine a lot, and I'm a big fan of a babyface shine. This one had Haku just like absolutely like smoking Brett's head with a thrust kick. But other than that, I mean, they made Brett look foolish at some points, but I just didn't feel like it was as fun and as entertaining as the Rougeaus match. The heat segment was the usual Hart Foundation heat segment. Though it's the one thing with the Hart Foundation, you know, is kind of, if you've seen one heat segment, you kind of seen them all at this point. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, I think this one didn't have as all the spots that are trademarks. And then the finish wasn't as good. Like, I felt like Jacques, you know, was really like pumped for this one. This one, it's like a shorter Haku House of Fire before Tama comes flying halfway across the ring to nail Brett with the crossbody. And then similar to the Boston match, they have Dan Davis come over and put Brett on top. It's a good match. It's entertaining, but it's bit of a letdown given the teams involved and given what the Rougeaus were able to do the week before in Boston. It's probably just because, you know, in Boston people try harder.
that's got to be it. I agree. Yeah, this one just didn't click really for me either. There were some good parts to it. Haku's hot tag was pretty good. Like, his House of Fire is really, really sweet at this point. I really like it. And Tama, he's a great face in peril, too.
Oh, there was a good Tama thing that I saw in the rewatch that I didn't remember from before, is when Haku kicks Bret Hart in the head, he actually mocks Bret's selling. He's selling his head, too, on the apron, but, like, you know, laughing about it. Dude was the man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this one had a hot crowd, too. They were really into this. A lot of that to do with Davis, like we said, at ringside. Commentary for this, we have Dick Graham, of course, it's Philadelphia, with Ken Resnick, who commentated some Boston matches, too. And I think this was actually his last show. And really, he's one of the worst announcers I've encountered in quite a while. I just can't stand him. At one point, he confuses Tama and Haku. Maybe for the whole match he does. I'm not sure.
Oh, but I watched an Islanders match where that happened, and it was like in late 87. It's like the strike. Somebody was still known. Yeah. But it was just so annoying that happened. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, no, at one point, yeah, he's got them mixed up completely. Another thing that they bring up, Anvil's supposed football career with the Oakland Raiders. And, you know, it's funny because, of course, he never played a regular season game with the Raiders, but they acted like he had this long career with them. Basically, they treat anybody who had a cup of coffee with the NFL like they were an all-pro or near Hall of Famer or whatever, but very few of them ever actually played regular season games. Because I'd always wonder when they'd mention it over the years, oh, Anvil was on the Raiders. Well, was he really? No, he wasn't really. He was, I guess, in a few exhibition games, but that's all.
Wow, way to be a buzzkill. I didn't
know.
Just like, I was just thinking to myself, man, Jim the Anvil Neidhart's this stud football player. Now you're just exposing the truth, man.
Yeah, I'd heard it for years and years, and I finally, when watching this match, I decided to actually, you know, now with the internet, with all this information at my disposal, I thought I'm going to finally see if he had a career in the NFL.
What's next, man? You going to expose him for, you know, robbing pharmacies too, brother?
Man. I don't think I have to expose too much of Anvil's criminal behavior. It's well documented. But yeah, sorry for any hardcore Anvil fans out there that may have thought that he had a big career with the Oakland Raiders.
His football career is still real to me, damn it.
Anyway, yeah, this was, you know, very similar to the previous match, exact same finish. But yeah, there was just something not clicking with this one. I can't really put my finger.
Oh, you know what the other good thing was about the Rougeau's match? The Islanders match didn't have. Rougeau's match had a better false finish with the somersault off the top rope.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Before they saved it.
Oh, yeah, because that was
a pretty good false finish.
Yeah, that was basically their finisher. And in the Boston match was actually a rematch, because at the previous Boston show, the Rougeaus had beat the Hearts in a non-title match. So there was that sort of extra, you know, feeling that there could be a title change or whatever.
Another interesting point about Rougeau history in Boston was 3 months prior to this, they had wrestled the new U.S. Express of Mike Rotundo and Danny Spivey.
Yeah.
And the crowd was chanting boring at them, proving that with hard work and, you know, good determination, that you can turn any crowd for you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, that match on paper sounds dreadful.
It was very boring. I watched it.
At a babyface versus babyface match.
Oh, man. There was so many front face locks, Kelly. It's like you did.
I don't even know why they were booking some of these matches exactly. Anyway, yeah. No, that one sounds pretty bad. So now we're going to Toronto. For the day after this Philly show, March 15th. And the show in Toronto that day was actually built around a tag team tournament that was called the Frank Tunney Senior Memorial Tag Team Tournament. And Frank Tunney Senior was the longtime promoter in Toronto, from I think even the late 30s to about 1983 or so, when he passed away. And he was the uncle of the famous Jack Tunney, who inherited his uncle's – I mean, he was the – yeah. Jack Tunney inherited his uncle's promotion and would eventually, when Vince bought out Toronto – be rewarded with an on-camera role, essentially, and he would become the president of the WWF.
And that's right.
Yes, which for fans of that time, if you grew up in the 80s, it was Jack Tunney in his strange rulings on things was a constant part of the programming over the years. Anyway, so yes,
people seem very fond of those days. You often hear, oh, why can't we go back to Jack Tunney showing up once or twice a year? I'm actually in favor of it. I think a behind-the-scenes matchmaker and hyping matches the week before they happen, but that would require TV the week before they happen, would be cool.
Yeah, they could at least do that.
Well, I heard that JB... I heard... from another podcast, from one of the reaction shows, that it's been confirmed at this point that they're doing it in Nitro style. They rewrite the show as it goes.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
pretty
incredible.
Much. I think they've been doing that for years now.
Yeah, I know. I think it has. Ever since they bought WCW, it's always, yeah, it feels they've inherited the worst traits of WCW.
I think you're right.
Anyways, but, back to World Wrestling Federation in 1987, when they weren't up, when they didn't have all these woes.
Exactly, when they weren't rewriting the show at the last second and things were planned well in advance.
Very well advanced.
Yes, and geez, what entertaining wrestling that produces. Who would think? So anyway, this was a tag team tournament. They did a few of these tournaments at the time. They did a Sam Muchnick tribute tournament in 1986. That was a singles tournament in St. Louis. They did another tag team tournament later in the year in New Jersey, I think.
They did the Wrestling Classic.
Yeah, and they had the Wrestling Classic in 85. They'd have King of the Ring tournaments, too, that at house shows.
At some point, Vince McMahon realized the tournaments don't draw.
Yeah. So this was, sort of a nice thing for longtime fans in Toronto who remember the Frank Tunney years in that city. Toronto had, year after year, decade after decade of big shows, big crowds, big stars go through that city. So this tournament it's interesting. Online, it was difficult to come by many of the matches. So we found Demolition versus the British Bulldogs, which was a quarterfinal match. And let's see, I stumbled upon this hot match from the first round. On one side, the great Can-Am Connection, Rick Martel and Tom Zink. But on the other side, we mentioned Danny Spivey. Danny Spivey was teamed with someone named Jerry Allen. Not exactly a team in the pantheon of great 80s WWF tag teams. But if you want to see that, it's available online. Let me read out some of the other matches from this card. And if they keep updating Primetime Wrestling on the network, these matches, a lot of these matches will make it on there because they all aired on Primetime Wrestling in March and April 87. So we had in the opening round, we had the Killer Bees versus Kamala and Sika, and the Killer Bees won. Quarterfinal match, first round match, whatever you want to call it. Like I mentioned, the Can-Am Connection went 10 minutes with Jerry Allen and Danny Spivey. Oh boy.
Who is Jerry Allen?
He was a job guy.
It's not Jerry Oski.
I don't think so, but
I'm trying to find out, but they said that Jerry Oski went by Jerry Allen.
Yeah, I definitely recognized him as a job guy from that time. Other first round matches.
Awesome.
Paul Orndorff and King Kong Bundy were a tag team in this tournament, and they defeated Don Morocco and Bob Orton Jr. in a battle of heels. Interesting. So the last first-round match is the match we're going to be looking at. Demolition, new team on the block, still with Johnny V at this point.
Still a walking disaster.
Still a walking disaster. Dun 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 dun. And they're taking on the former WWF Tag Team Champions, the British Bulldogs, who have seen much, much, much better days by this time. Dynamite Kid is basically crippled, essentially, and being forced to wrestle, I guess. I don't know. If you watch this match, you could tell that he couldn't do much at this point. So as a result, this isn't the most thrilling of matches. But anyway, Marty, what did you think of this one?
I'm going to paraphrase your cohort on Titans of Wrestling. Demolition match is a demolition match is a demolition match. Demolition jumpstarts the match and they be a clubberin'. Bear hugs. Dynamite does some selling. Davey Boy, great hot tag, a couple drop kicks, and a running power slam, saving the match. Johnny V trips. Dino throws a chair in the ring. Gets a little wild. Bulldogs are DQ'd. I just read my notes. I don't remember the match. That was it.
There wasn't much to it. I think I'll just read my notes, too, since there's not a lot. Monsoon and Jimmy Hart on commentary. Jimmy Hart? Why was he on commentary? Anyway, I didn't write that part, but...
Oh, I thought you wrote that!
It just occurred to me that's a very strange...
Oh, no, baby, that was what made me laugh as well. I was like, oh, man, he writes that. That's too funny.
Yeah, no, that was one of my footnotes. Bulldogs jacked as fuck. Walking advertisement for
Stan. Hey, watch out on the swearing, Kelly.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I don't have to. You do.
I do. Right.
You're the one who pledged to be to cut back on the cursing.
All right. Okay.
Demos attack before the bell and heave Davey Boy onto the ramp. Smash settles in with a chin lock immediately. Dynamite limited. Then a bear hug by Axe. Holy fuck, just a bunch of bear hugs. Dynamite tags out. He did a headbutt, nothing else. Davey house of fire. Dynamite can barely move. Dynamite throws in a chair and Davey uses it, resulting in a DQ. Nothing match. Dynamite couldn't do anything and match was super short.
that was pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, like, Dynamite legit had a bad back injury in December of 86. And
that's why they dropped the titles.
Yeah, that's why they dropped the titles. A
bunch of random people.
Yeah, and basically at this point, I don't think he'd been back for long, and he just couldn't do anything. He was just very limited, and it's kind of sad because, you know, you're never gonna see the classic Dynamite Kid again, basically, by this point. Even later on, you know, he's a shell of his former self from this point forward, unfortunately. Yeah, so that was the end of the first round of the tournament. The semifinals, Demolition take on the Can-Am Connection and win that match by countout. And in the other semifinal, the Killer Bees defeated Paul Orndorff and King Kong Bundy.
Oh, Heenan family team.
Yeah, and Blair pinned Orndorff in that match.
Yeah, Orndorff was on the way down.
Yeah, he was, totally. He was left off WrestleMania 3, actually.
So was Demolition.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were new. That's understandable.
They were new, yeah.
Orndorff had been the hottest heel in 1986, and he's left off the WrestleMania card. He must have been a little choked about that.
Yeah.
And then the finals were the Killer Bees defeating Demolition. And the winners of this tournament that same night received a tag team title match with the Hart Foundation. So the Bees had wrestled three times in kayfabe. Let's look at it kayfabe-wise here. The Bees had wrestled three times, and the Harts had just sat around in the back the whole night. And so, you know, not really fair for the Bees.
You can make an argument. They got the positive momentum of winning three matches. The Hearts are cold.
True. No, that's a good point. So anyway, the of course the Hearts won this match.
Well, yeah, and you will also be proven to be correct. So.
But it was because Danny Davis interfered and guess what? Reversed a small package attempt by the referees.
Oh man, I wonder when they came. Who came up with that finish?
That must have been like the only thing Danny did.
That was the finish du jour.
So in March 1987, that was the finish du jour of every Hearts tag match against multiple teams, apparently. So anyway, that was the, I think, one and only Frank Tunney Sr. Memorial Tag Team Tournament. Didn't have the staying power of the Crockett Cup, which itself didn't last that long, but lasted longer than one.
We can see year. How long the WWE... one last, the Dusty Rhodes one, which is actually
on as we speak.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows, not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Ol' Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
All right, WrestleMania 3, March 29th, 1987, the Pontiac Silverdome.
Did you ever have a gold Trans Am?
A gold Trans Am? No.
No. Oh, man, Kelly, you're missing out.
Yeah, no.
That's my next car.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, yeah. So yeah.
I actually won my current car in a raffle from PBS.
That's right. Yeah, you mentioned that. PBS. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've already mentioned that story.
Well, you mentioned it to me. I don't know if you mentioned it on air before.
Ah, yes. I want to be a PBS. So anyways, continue. Pontiac, so after this car, I'm getting a gold Trans Am for sure.
Cool. So, yes. Pontiac.
This is like the third time we've recorded this, so I wanted to change it up a little.
Yeah. Yeah, just to give you a shot behind the curtain, fans. This has been a long, long recording. It's taken multiple weeks to finally get finished.
This is like the old school, like World Wrestling Federation TV tapings. I'm exhausted. I feel like I'm on my fourth 2-minute squash.
Yeah. So anyway, Pontiac, Michigan, yes, outside of Detroit, Motor City. And yes, it was, you know, it is one of the most fondly remembered wrestling shows of all time. 93,173, maybe.
Break Pope's attendance record, my holy father.
Yeah. A lot of people, depending on who you believe, some say it wasn't that high of an attendance, but I mean, it was a lot of damn people anyway. The first time I saw it, I couldn't believe it. It just looked so cool. It was amazing. It was the perfect setting, of course, for Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, the match of the century. One of the, if not the most, you know, famous match in wrestling history. And here we are, tag team matches on the big show. The first one up is the Can-Am Connection versus Don Morocco and Bob Orton. Yeah, I mean, Morocco and Orton, managed by Mr. Fuji. We haven't looked at them yet. They started teaming about 5 or 6 months prior to this.
There's a good match between the Islanders.
Oh, well, that's not surprising.
No, I know. That's like saying that, you know, the sun's coming up tomorrow. Yeah. But we did not look at it. But, yeah, there is a Islanders versus Don Morocco, Bob Orton match.
Huh. So, yeah, no, I'll have to check that out.
I think it's from Philadelphia.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they teamed for quite a while. They it was like an offshoot of the Piper Adonis feud that they began teaming to begin with, but they stayed the team for a while actually. So here we go.
I always idea, you know, putting two singles guys in a tag team.
Yeah, it gave
them all for it.
Yeah, that's a solution. Yeah, Morocco was getting a little old at this point, and not, you know, couldn't do a ton by himself.
Could he do a ton before?
Yeah, Orton could carry the load, literally and figuratively. And
that was a good one.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot.
So this may be the only time we look at them on tag teams back again. I'm not sure. And so here we are, the opener, right after Aretha Franklin delivered a breathtaking version of America the Beautiful.
It was awe-inspiring and sublime.
Yes. And right after that, we had this hot opener. Marty, what did you think?
I agree. This was a good choice for an opener. I think you have Orton and Morocco that bring the stooging and the bumping. They are always they're selfless, giving the match the Can-Ams. You got Rick Martel that brings the fire. And that Tom Zank, I guess he brings the sex appeal because he sucked in this match. Some really horrible arm drags, lame arm bar. He looked confused. Overwhelmed. I have no idea. I mean, hey, how long has he been wrestling? A year, and he's in front of 93,000 people? I'd probably be shitting my pants, too. So, I can see where it's coming from. Yeah, but anyways, he definitely seemed overwhelmed by the moment. Rick Martel's the man. He was just fucking going all out in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Love hanging on to the arm after a hair throw. You know, that tenacity. The Rick Martel tenacity. The finish stretch was really sweet, actually. I mean, I was shocked how good this match was. For like 5 minutes, they just went balls to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And like Rick Martel's fire, like totally, like this crowd was awake. I think they weren't prepared to be awake. Like they were going to bide their time. But Rick Martel forced them to be on their feet. Don Morocco, he takes a flare. Don fucking Morocco taking a flare flip, baby. Mm-hmm. He was up for this match. A double drop kick, and Orton, we all know Bob Orton Jr. loves the big bump. He takes a nice big bump over the top rope. And then we got a great spot. I'm a big fan of the tabletop. So you got Morocco, who's a, you know, he's a big man. He's a big hunk of man. So the Can-Ams have to use a little bit of have to use some double team, and they got the crossbody tabletop combo. For a win. I would say shockingly good. I was surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 out of 4 are pretty damn good. I mean, John Mark can be good when he wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember as a kid really liking this match. And yeah, I mean, it's short. They're not given a ton of time, but they get right to the points. And it's a pretty fun match. Morocco, wow. Was he jacked? Yeah, I mean, you know,
oh my God, Kelly! In a year,
yes,
he's the only person that Greg Valentine looks like shit.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the Bulldogs being jacked before. Morocco's ridiculously jacked, and yes, it's true. He'll get even more jacked in 1988 to where he barely can move. Basically, his offense is like elbow, and he wrestles in maybe like 25% of the ring, and he's pretty awful.
But, oh my God, he wrestles like 20 minute draws with Greg Valentine. That would have been a true testament to Valentine if he got a good match out of him, but no, it was impossible.
There wasn't a good match to be had at that point. Martel was great in this, the usual House of Fire Martel, just totally bouncing off the walls. It was a good finishing sequence too, with the flying body press.
Yep. Loved it.
Yep, solid. Got the Can-Ams over as the hot up and coming team.
They look like the new babyface tag team. I would have predicted them to win the titles.
Yep, and
they basically did.
At this point, it was probably booked for the fall. that they would win them, or maybe even sooner, who knows. Of course, plans change, and Mr. Zink thinks he's a little too big for his britches, I think, later, and pulls a bit of a power play, money play, and gets shown the door. And Tito has to step in, and the team is, of course, rechristened Strike Force, but that's all in the future. Right now,
they could have been KMX.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. The CanMex connection.
The CanMex connection. I would have dug that.
Yeah, a missed opportunity, perhaps. But yes, the Can-Ams looked pretty good themselves, though. And yeah, this was a fine match. So next up, we go to... Yes, I'll maybe insert some sad music at this point. The Dream Team versus the Rougeau Brothers. Yeah, we've come finally to the end of the road.
You'll put in a dirge, a nice funeral dirge.
Yeah.
Is that how you say that word?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I've never actually said that word out loud. A first on Tag Teams Back Again.
But yes, the Dream Team has provided us with a lot of entertainment over the months, and it is sad to see it come to an end finally. I mean, I kind of thought it was over a few times, you know, in the past. We weren't sure what matches we were looking at, and I think we gave them a farewell already, but here's their encore, their curtain call.
Here's their awkward farewell.
Yeah.
Where you say goodbye to somebody, but then you end up going the same way as
It's kind of like you already had that teary goodbye, and then you actually bump into them again later, and it's like, well,
it turns out you guys parked in the same parking lot.
So it's awkward. Yes, this is an awkward goodbye. Marty, what did you make of this match?
I'm reading my notes. I'm gonna have to just read them out loud. I don't remember the match. Greg Valentine bumped around. Jacques missed a reverse crossbody. That's a common Jacques Rougeau spot to be on the lookout. That's a common spot for him to go into the heat segment. Valentine applies the figure four, but they make the ropes. Oh yes, I like this spot. Jacques, so the doomsday device is all the rage at this point. Yeah. So everybody's come up with their own variation.
Yeah.
So Jacques' variation is the flying crotch.
Yep.
Oh, man. The ref is distracted, though, after the flying crotch.
It's such a French move. It's such a French move.
Yeah, it's a very French move. What was the French guy who you had, like, the French tickler or something?
The French tickler.
Dupree or Sly?
I don't know.
This is some mid-2000s trivia.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm not good at that era.
I think it's... Oh, yeah, you got to practice for Brainbuster, brother.
Yeah, I guess I should.
I think we need to put the fix in and start putting in some, like, 2003 to 2006 trivia.
Shh. No, don't give anyone ideas.
I think that's the key to my victory right now. I think it was Rene Dupree. I haven't thought about Dupree in so long. Anyways, the ref is distracted. Dino Bravo, who's got a very nice Canadian flag on his shirt. Whoa, but look, very interestingly, has renounced his Quebecois background against the Quebecois. So he's just got the maple leaf, none of the no lilies here, and comes crashing down on the Rougeaus. And the Valentine covers for the victory. So, yes, there you go. That is the demise. It was one funny spot. I thought the flying crotch was pretty hilarious, yeah. But otherwise it was pretty basic stuff. It does set up the new Dream Team.
Yep. Yeah, it's basically an angle, this match.
Yeah.
Bravo's a Swank Canada flag jacket. That's marvelous. He doesn't wear it for long. It's kind of a few month thing in 1987, and then he does re-embrace his Quebecois roots eventually, of course, and then wears like head to toe fleur de lis for the rest of his stint in the WWF. Yeah, I mean, Hammer came out with some stiff shots at the beginning, as always. Yeah, this was quick. It. I mean, if nothing else, hey, the Dream Team were victorious in their final match.
I know. That's pretty cool. There was a Beefcake accidentally hit the hammer to
yes, exactly. To
set up the further dissension.
Yeah, on TV for months they'd been teasing that there was dissension. Beefcake had cost the matches multiple times, and this was the final straw. So they brought in Bravo a few months earlier, and now, yeah, this is what would happen is basically during the hair versus hair match later in the evening between Piper and Adrian Adonis, which was Piper's first retirement match. Piper wins, of course, and who comes out to shave the head is none other than Brutus Beefcake. And the story behind that was that in a match prior to WrestleMania, it was a six-man. It was the Dream Team and Adonis against... I can't remember. I don't think Piper was involved. But at some point, Brutus gets his hair accidentally cut by Adonis, because Adonis was doing the haircut gimmick at the time. And so this was the reason why Beefcake came out for this. This was his revenge for the haircut. And he tries to shave Adonis's head, but the shears weren't working properly. And so you just get like a half-shaved head. It was... quite disappointing, actually, as a fan watching this, that after all these months that you didn't even get the right payoff for the stipulation. But, of course, this was the birth of Brutus the Barber Beefcake, and he was turned face, and the rest is history and many, many shitty, shitty matches ahead of him from this point forward. So, and the story for Greg Valentine is that him and Dino Bravo, of course, now become the new Dream Team, which I'm actually interested in seeing, because I can't say I've seen many new Dream Team matches ever.
There's a good one against the Rockers.
Okay, yeah, you said that before, so that's a possibility. So yeah, I'm actually interested to see them in action. I want to see.
There's one against the Rougeaus.
Yeah, I want to see what Valentine can do, because he really still has.
I like Dino Bravo.
Yeah, I don't like bleach blonde jacked up Dino Bravo, but we'll see what this Dino Bravo is like. He had just bleached his hair blonde, actually, not too long before this.
Yes, I actually I've only recently started watching some dark haired Dino Bravo.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm interested to see what Hammer can do with Dino. So now, on to probably, this could be like I guess it'd be about the number four or so match on the card. It's a big one, though. It's built long in advance, long time coming, with the Hearts and Danny Davis wrestling for the first time against the British Bulldogs and Tito Santana, the three men that he screwed out of titles in the preceding year. So yeah, it's the ultimate revenge match. I remember being pretty psyched to see this one as a kid. I wanted to see Davis get his ass beat from pillar to post. And here we are. Marty, what were your thoughts on this one?
I thought this was wicked fun. Just pure popcorn wrestling. This is what WWF excelled in the late 80s. I mean, it's not something that's going to do great at the star ratings bank, but it's going to do great at the, you know, putting smiles on people's faces. And that's what counts, and that's where you take. That's where you get money going into your bank account, baby, from star rating.
That's true. Let me tell you.
And so, yeah, no, I really thought the babyface side segment was just awesome. Just really gets you pumped up. Tito Santana is the fucking man. He works every match like he hates the person, like that person robbed him or slept with his girlfriend. You just felt like Tito Santana was rip shit. I mean, he was actually robbed, if you think about it. He was robbed of his intercontinental title. So... Danny Davis is useless, though. It's just I couldn't see where people are coming from. Maybe you can't do much with a wrestling ref, I don't know. I just really do think that it was Danny Davis. Dude just sucked so much, and he was just so lame. He didn't even pose correctly for Bulldog's delayed vertical suplex.
That's right.
It was quite the feat of sucking. But like we've said earlier in the show, incredible amount of heat. Probably the most heat of the night, I would imagine.
To this point,
Hogan and Andre had like heat in the sense there's a lot of like crowd involvement, but I think in terms of like vitriol and just hatred,
right?
Danny Davis, man, it just would have been crazy if the guy was worth a damn. But the finish though, it was just really confusing. I forgot what it was, and then I couldn't believe that Davis went over due to nefarious tech.
Yeah.
So it does show that they thought the gimmick had some legs.
Yep.
Did he have drug problems?
I don't know.
Or something.
Are we steroids?
Gonna... I feel like he got thrown out of the WWE.
Danny Davis? No. He stuck around for quite a while. He eventually becomes a referee again.
Does he?
Yeah, about two years later. Yeah, he's reinstated. They even announced it on TV that they've reinstated him.
Oh, yeah, he wrestled for 2 years.
Weird. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he becomes a jobber by the end of 1987, essentially. For some reason,
I thought he had some sort of issue and they fired him. But, yeah, crazy that he ended up winning wins the match. He gets it. You know, you saw the heat. You thought they would have blown off the heat.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like they had ideas for, or they thought that he was going to keep going, but the wrestler just realized he sucked.
Yeah, well, I mean, plans change. Even if they didn't think he sucked, things just change. Something you think is going to happen, it just doesn't go that way. But yeah, at this point, it definitely seemed like they had something further planned for him to finally get his comeuppance, but it didn't really work that way. He gets his ass beat all over the ring from the mat.
Yeah.
He takes the finishers. He takes the flying forearm smash. He takes the power slam, a pile driver, jumping tombstone pile driver. So there's that. The fans did get satisfaction. They got to see him get beat up. It's smartly booked. I mean, that's how you want to book it to keep it going, right? And to please the fans.
Yeah. It's just that it didn't end up going anywhere, which is just weird. Well, that's why I thought it was strange, and that's why I always forget the finish.
They had plans. I mean, it was still a little early to kill off his heat, I think. And, they thought, well, maybe this could go somewhere, but it didn't. But, it was a fast-paced match, like you said, action-packed. Everyone got to shine. I enjoyed it big time watching it again. For the first time in a long time. And pretty much the high point of the tag team scene on the WrestleMania 3 card. Because now we go to the final.
The main event of the evening.
The main event of the tag team matches. The Killer Bees versus the Sheik and Volkov. Both teams. In case you're confused.
We're in Detroit. It could be confusing.
You're right. That's right. They brought the original Sheik out of retirement. Of course, the Iron Sheik. And these two teams kind of feel like yesterday's news at this point, especially Sheik and Volkov, which have been around longer than any of the other teams in the promotion.
It would have been cool if they brought back the original Sheik.
Yeah, well, too late now. They had a
time machine.
Yeah, we need a time machine. But yeah, Sheik and Volkov first started teaming up when Sergeant Slaughter was still in the WWF.
Yeah, 1984.
And the Killer Bees started in 1985, but they were clearly on the downhill at this point. Here we go. Last tag team match, the last match before the main event. Marty, what did you think of this?
What a waste of Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Just, I recently watched like 8 matches from Mid-South. This dude has insane babyface charisma, can work one hell of a brawl. It was very disappointing having watched all that Mid-South footage to realize where Hacksaw Duggan ended up. He's in this match. He's a excuse me. He's out in the ring, out for the Killer Beast, counteract what, Slick? Just so disappointing. I feel like Hacksaw could have been a real force of nature.
Yeah, well, you could say that about his whole tenure in the WWF, really.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, in 87, they really could have capitalized on it. He was in good shape. He looked good.
Yeah,
he just looked like, sure, you know, yeah, I mean, just squandered opportunity. Anyway, so all 4 men are in to start. Got a nice little hot dive. You know, it's a different style, different opener, different opening to a match. They went for kind of a more of a melee. And Brunzel gets his drop kick early, actually. Mm-hmm. And
massive.
Yeah, I know. And Brunzel ends up taking the heat, gets a bear hug on him. Nice punch to get out. Fucking gorilla. What an asshole this guy is. He said it was a feeble attempt to get out. And that was a nice punch. Like, what gives, asshole? Like, you know, what a dick. Like, people defend that guy, but I don't like him at all.
You're not a gorilla fan.
Yeah, I'm not a gorilla fan. Not a gorilla fan. Sheik, you know what you're going to get at a Sheiky baby match? You're going to get some nice suplexes. Guy throws a sweet suplex. They do some chasing around with Duggan. He nails Sheiky Baby with a 2x4 during the camel clutch. I didn't write whether that was a DQ or if that the Bees won the match. So you can fill that in, Kelly. I'm throwing it to you.
The finish was DQ. Duggan interferes.
It was a DQ. So when he nails him with a 2x4, yeah, it was a DQ.
Yeah. So the Bees are DQ'd. Of course, Duggan had just shown up, I think, a month or so before this, and immediately got into a feud with the Sheik and Volkov.
Oh, yeah. That's clearly the big thing. I mean, but yeah, UWF was just sold at this point, right?
He bailed long before they were – well, not long before, but before they were sold.
Not long before, because by April of 87, they were using Crockett wrestlers.
Yeah, you're right.
Because Big Bubba Rogers won the title, I think, in April of 87.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so, yeah, he was gone, and then, yeah, DiBiase left right after that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Crockett got those two. Holy shit, Flair versus Duggan? That would have been sweet. That would have been awesome. Especially 87, Flair had a really hard time. I mean, I like Ronnie Garvin, but feuding with Jimmy Garvin for most of the summer?
Right. I have
all right. Sorry, Wrestling Federation. Crockett always gets me going.
Well, we'll get into it someday, I'm sure. For me, Duggan, yeah. I can't get past the WWF years. That's the Duggan I knew first. I have been watching.
You'll get Mid-South past it. Too. Don't worry.
Yeah, no. I do enjoy what I've seen from Mid-South of Duggan, but as a teenager, I just absolutely hated. Jim Duggan, Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Is that because you're from Canada?
Yeah, it could have been. Well, that was part of it, actually, yeah. There's no doubt about that, because there was a lot of kind of anti-U.S. kind of sentiment in Canada.
Hold on. I don't know about this. I have found that Canadians love Real American, the theme song. Like, universally, Canadians dig that theme song.
Yeah.
The real American one.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's complicated, you know. The flag was...
It's a complicated relationship with America. We love Hulk Hogan, but we don't like Jim Duggan.
That's kind of the thing, yeah. You know, the flag
Canadians,
was...
Canadians, you make no sense.
The flag was flown upside down at the World Series in 1992, and yeah, that was one of the things. But anyway...
Wait, who... I didn't know about that.
That was before your time. It was in Atlanta. Yeah. The first World Series game.
Atlanta flew the Canadian flag upside down.
Yeah, at the first World Series game in Atlanta.
How does that affect your love for Jim Duggan in 1987?
Well, because he was Mr. USA.
Yeah, but it was 1987.
He was still around in 1992. That was the peak of my Duggan hatred was around 1990, just before he left WWE.
Oh my God, you were such an angry little man.
Yeah, I was a heel fan by that point too. Anyway, yeah. Oh my.
1992. You love the model and the heartbreak kid.
I did.
Do you consider yourself a pretty boy? You had long hair.
Not so much then. But Mr. Perfect was another one I loved. So yeah, we're padding out this match because there wasn't much to it. But yes, Duggan was in for a jingoistic feud with the Sheik and Volkov right off the bat, and he'd actually came out and chased Volkov off from singing the Russian anthem. That was at the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah, so we didn't see that. That's why there was also a bunch of garbage in the ring, if you're wondering, and at ringside from the fans throwing it.
Yeah,
from the Russian anthem, which was over huge as a heel thing at that time.
Almost, yes.
So, of course, the story between Jim Duggan and the Iron Sheik gets interesting after this. On May 26th in New Jersey, so 2 months later, and they'd been feuding around the horn and wrestling every night after WrestleMania 3. And on May 26th, 1987, in New Jersey, they were pulled over and caught by a police officer in the same vehicle. And they had, I believe, weed and cocaine. And this made the news. And, of course, at the time, they were supposed to be feuding and supposed to hate each other, right? But here they are hanging out in the same car. And I think, looking back on it, this, like, I knew I was aware of this incident. And I think that may have been the moment that wrestling died kayfabe-wise for me, or the beginning of it. Because I knew, like, I was thinking, why were they in the car together? They hate each other. Maybe wrestling is fake, like my dad would say every time he walked into the room and I was watching TV. Yeah,
what a dickhead.
It was, yeah. My youth.
So was that
my youth ended May 26th, 1987.
So, okay, we've gotten to the root of the issue.
Yes.
That's why you hate Jim Duggan. I can accept that now.
Yeah.
He killed your childhood.
He did. We talked this out in a Freudian psychoanalysis session or something.
I think that's what it was. We were covering up with some other stuff with people,
right?
You know, flying flags upside down by accident. But really, is the root cause is this whole drug bust.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we figured it out.
If we were together right now, I'd give you a hug.
Jim Duggan ruined my childhood. He stole my innocence. On that lovely note, we come to the end of today's show. Well, the WrestleMania 3 matches were, for the most part, forgettable. There was a couple interesting ones. I guess forgettable is not the right word, because even the Dream Team match had the memorable finish and the breakup and all that. But not too much substance to these WrestleMania matches. Marty, what would you say was the best match that we looked at today?
The Rougeau's match.
Yeah.
The Boston, baby.
Yeah, there's really nothing that even comes close. Although I was highly entertained by the six-man tag with Davis. And...
Yes, I would say that was number two on the entertainment scale.
Yeah. Okay. Top, let's see, best face in peril this go around.
Best? We're doing best face
and
in peril.
And anyone stand out?
I'm trying to think if anyone stood out. Let's see, we had Ramon, we had Tama, we had Dynamite. Yeah, Dynamite again. We had, I don't even remember who took Heat and Martel Zank. I think it was Zank because Martel was a hot tag.
Yeah.
No, I don't have a best face in peril. I'm trying to think of a witty joke response, but I don't have one of those either. Fresh out like Christmas turkey.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ramon. I think that was the best match, and I think he was pretty solid.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty solid. I think Tama was probably better, if I could remember the matches.
Right. Tama has definitely been maybe the best face in peril throughout the different episodes so far. Yeah. How about best hot tag?
Best hot tag, Rick Martel.
I'm going to say, he's always a good default choice. But I'm going to go with Haku in the Philly match against the Island, against the Heart. I've really come to like the Haku House of Fire. I've come to really like that Haku House of Fire. So
that was a good one. I don't think it was Ricky Martel but the time, though. No, Ricky Martel thought it was pretty good. Yeah. Actually, I'm gonna give it to Jacques Flying Crotch. I don't know if that was a hot tag or what it was, but yeah.
That was a hot
flying
tag.
Jacques Flying Crotch is gonna win an award.
That was a hot tag of some sort.
It was a hot moment between his crotch and Greg Valentine's face.
That was the hottest tag of them all. Okay, Marty. Well, next time on Tag Teams Back Again, we are going to be looking at...
There it is.
I almost got snuck one by you. We are going to be looking at makeshift tag teams again, like we did on the second episode of this podcast. And this time, makeshift tag teams from 1987. There's quite a few possibilities out there. There's one match.
Some famous ones.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's some famous ones. There's some that I've never seen before and sound pretty interesting, such as Hulk Hogan and Coco Beware against Kamala and the Honky Tonk Man.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, that's Kelly's dream match.
That's a timely match. It's torn from the headlines of today. So we'll get into that. There's another Hogan Piper match. Again, they're taking on Orndorff and Kamala from Philly. So that could be interesting as well. And then there's a few other possibilities out there. We'll put together a playlist and we will determine which ones will be the best. This show, you know, we were kind of lean on the matches. I think next time we got to load up some big matches.
Some real humdingers.
Some hot matches. And yes. Yeah. And
some real Donnybrooks.
Some real good Donnybrooks. And of course, we will be back in probably about a month's time for yet another installment. Yeah, maybe even sooner since we missed it. It
took so long. I feel like we should double up in Rocktober.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll double up.
Let's take some names.
Yeah. So anything you want to say before we leave tonight, Marty?
To check out my blog, ridingspacemountain.blogspot.com. I reviewed a bunch of matches since we last talked, and then I've reviewed even more matches, and I just haven't gotten around to actually posting them to my blog. But if you ever wanted to just read these reviews without going to my blog, you could always go to prowrestlingonly.com, where I post a Superstar Sleaze. That's S-L-E-E-Z-E, because misspelling is extreme. Follow me on Twitter at Superstar Sleaze also.
All right. Okay. And yes, for myself and Marty, Brainbuster coming up. Around Halloween.
Yes, champion versus champion.
We've alluded to it a few times, and Titans Wrestling will be back. Oh, yeah.
I'm so pumped for that.
Yeah.
I'm more pumped for that than the shows I've been on.
Yeah. Some 19.
It's going to be great.
1980.
Is it Backlund versus Orton or Backlund versus
Adonis? Yes, we're getting on to Backlund and Orton, and we also have another Backlund Adonis match, a lumberjack match from the Cap Center. I've never seen that match before. I'm excited. Who else? And then Backlund and Snuka starts up, so yeah.
Snuka is a cool character in 82.
Oh, for
definitely
sure. Cool. He was maybe the coolest character in wrestling, 82, 83. He
wrestles like Zombie Undertaker. It's real cool. He like stalks his prey. He's got an interesting vibe to him.
He does. So I'm looking forward to that. All right. And of course, tag teams back again, makeshift tag teams. Be on the lookout for it. Good night, folks.
Woo!
And now, here to sing America the Beautiful, the Queen of Soul, Miss Aretha Franklin!
Purple night.